This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. Whether the call is coming from a state governor or directly from the President of the United States, the National Guard must always be ready to respond and engage, whether at home or abroad. Today, like most of the government, the Guard is hardly immune to this period of fiscal contraction and has sought to respond to this new fiscal reality by reducing waste, controlling cost, and improving business processes. What is the mission of the National Guard Joint Continuous Process Improvement Initiative? How is the Guard improving its operations, becoming more efficient, and controlling cost? And what is the Guard doing to promote management and organizational excellence? We'll explore these questions and so much more with our very special guest, Colonel Donald Dellinger, Deployment Director of the Continuous Process Improvement Initiative within the National Guard Bureau. Welcome, Colonel. Also joining our conversation from IBM is Phil Spencer. Well, Colonel, let's start off by getting some context. Can you tell us more about the mission of the U.S. National Guard Bureau? How does your organization support the overall mission of its dual state and federal force?
Sure. The mission of the National Guard Bureau is to participate with the Army and Air Force staffs in programs pertaining to the National Guard. And we also work with the states and the adjutants generals with the 54 states and territories to assist in maintaining and developing the National Guard for the future missions and roles that we give into the Guard.
Your focus is on eliminating waste and realizing efficiencies. To help us get a sense of scale, how is the Bureau and the Guard organized? What's the size of its budget, the total force size, and its geographical footprint?
Sure. Most people don't realize how large the National Guard is. Currently, the National Guard is in 3,300 communities across the nation. And when we say that when you employ the National Guard or deploy the National Guard, you're actually employing the nation because of all the communities that we touch. And we are in all 54 states and territories. On the Army side of the house, there are approximately 350,000 soldiers in the Army National Guard, which is 32% of the total Army force and also 11% of the total Army budget. On the air side of the house, there's approximately 107,000 airmen in the Air Guard, which is 21% of the total Air Force personnel and 6% of the Air Force budget.
Perhaps you could tell us about your specific area and your role within the Bureau as the Deployment Director of the National Guard Joint Continuous Process Improvement Initiative. What are your specific duties and what's the mission of the CPI office within the Guard?
The Joint CPI office was established in 2009 by General McKinley. And the purpose was to assist in maintaining mission and ready forces by removing waste and non-value activities. The mission of the National Guard Bureau Joint Process Improvement Office is to create a culture of continuous improvement by deploying tools, training, and mentoring soldiers and airmen throughout the National Guard. And in my duties and responsibilities, the main one is just overseeing the entire program from cradle to grave. So basically, we take from change management to training to mentoring and coaching to project completion. So the whole gamut and all the mechanics of having a successful continuous process improvement deployment within an organization.
Regarding your responsibilities and duties, I'm sure there are a lot of challenges that you face, but could you tell us about the top three, perhaps, that you're facing right now? And what are some actions that you're taking to overcome them?
I would probably say the top issue that we're challenged that we're facing right now is influencing culture change at the top. The real culture change comes from people in senior leadership positions who are kind of set and used to the way of doing business and don't necessarily gravitate to new ways of doing things, especially when they're focused on the mission right at hand and they looking at the investment and not really knowing how well it's going to work. And so to address that, my main job as the deployment director, the CPI director, is to go have those senior leader engagements and educate the senior leadership on what continuous process improvement is about and how Lean Six Sigma can help them achieve their goals and objectives that's nested within their strategy. The second one is how to sustain the effort. As we talked about earlier about the size of the National Guard, there's a lot of complexities within how the National Guard operates. Mike stated earlier, it's a dual force type organization. You have the federal side and you have the state side. And on the state side of the house, which is Title 32, most of the states operate within that realm and only go federal when they're activated. So the chief of the National Guard Bureau does not have direct command and control over those individuals or those states or organizations to be able to direct them to implement continuous process improvement. He can only recommend and provide resources for them to execute if they so see that it would assist them. And so sustaining the effort is very difficult because you have change in leadership, and then 54 states and territories is a huge footprint because we're talking about the whole continental United States and outside of the United States when you take into the territories into account. And so ensuring that you have a viable training pipeline, sustaining new leaders coming in so that when the old leaders move out, that you have provided a lifeline, so to speak, of the growth and the continued use of Lean Six Sigma and that thought process throughout. The other piece that we have is my office is just kind of an advisory role. There's no direct command and control over the execution of the program. So although we know best practices and the things that would help facilitate a successful continuous process improvement deployment, we can only advise since we don't know how to execute. Some of the difficulties that we have is trying to influence people to do what you know they need to do doesn't always work. They have their own mind on how CPI should fit into their organization and how they operate. And so trying to overcome those obstacles takes a lot of personal meetings and relationship building to overcome that.
Great, thanks. Could you describe for our listeners your career path and, you know, how did you begin your career? What were some of the milestones and what brought you to this leadership position you're in right now?
Well, my father was in the military, so I had moved around quite a bit and got to view a lot of different places in the world that were not necessarily the best, so to speak. And it really made me have a great appreciation for what the United States has given me as a citizen and wanted to give back. And so I went to Military Junior College, Wentworth Military Junior College, and was commissioned at the age of 19 through the early commissioning program in 1986. And I've been a guardsman ever since then with no active duty time. I spent time in the Missouri, Illinois, Guam, and now currently the Oregon National Guard. And I started my full-time job in the National Guard in the Active Guard and Reserve program in 1994. With that, the latest jobs that I've had is I had a battalion command in the Oregon National Guard, deployed to Afghanistan with Task Force Phoenix, which was responsible for the mentoring and coaching of the and training of the Afghan National Security Forces, both the Army and the police. And after that, I was selected to go to do a fellowship for my Army Senior Service College at the Center of Strategic and International Studies here in Washington, D.C., one of the premier think tanks for a year, which was a phenomenal experience. And then after that, I was interviewed and was selected to be the director of the Continuous Process Improvement for General McKinley.
Well, given all your experience, and it's a wealth of experience, I'm particularly interested in your deployment to Afghanistan and the leadership skills you needed to do what your charge was there. What are the characteristics of an effective leader in an increasingly interconnected and networked world? And who particularly has influenced your leadership style?
Well, I think one of the big people that influenced my leadership style was Brigadier General Douglas Pritt, who was the 41st Brigade Commander. We really connected, so he has been a great mentor. I think the big thing that I learned from him is really integrity and value-oriented leadership. Most people will do anything for you if they know that your interests are selfless and it's for the best interests of the organization and that that's what you're striving to do. With that, I think leading by example is key, trusting your subordinates and empowering them to make decisions and to execute. And communication, I think communication is very important in today's day and age, making sure that your intent is understood by everybody. And communicating, I don't think you can over-communicate when you're trying to work and execute something. I think also with today's world, with it being with so much information, key trait is being able to decipher what is important and what is not important and to be able to focus in on that and to execute from that perspective.
I'd like to ask a follow-up in regards to the fact that your current role as deployment director, you don't have, as you said, a real power, if you will, to make folks force change or implement change. You're kind of facilitating it. Does that require a different leadership style, and have you employed that from your other experiences?
Very much so. You know, when you're a battalion commander and you're in charge of a battalion, it's very direct type leadership. You know, you're the guy in charge, you tell people what to do, and they execute. At this level, it's been very challenging but very rewarding because I am dealing with the senior leadership of the state, which is usually two-star, one-star individuals, and also my peers at the 06 level. So I think you have to take a different approach in showing them the value. Leaders not going to get behind a program if they don't see the value added to that to them and how it's going to help them out. I think part of that that we've really been key on is trying to, one, demonstrate value and then communicate that value. Because initially, CPI isn't for everybody. The bottom line is if the leadership isn't behind it, it's not going to work. What we preach is that we are working with the states that are believers and using them as kind of a proof of principle to get everybody else on board. And we've actually started to get some really good traction now in the second year with finally getting projects completed.
What is the mission of the National Guard Joint Continuous Process Improvement Initiative? We will ask Colonel Donald Dellinger, its director, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. What are the seven management imperatives all government executives need to know? How is DoD improving its business operations? What is FAA's Next Generation Air Transportation System, or NextJet? How is New York City shaping a government that is customer-focused, innovative, and more efficient? And what about power, security, and leadership in the 21st century? Pick up the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine and find out. We bring you insights and interviews from government executives who are changing the way government does business. Download or order a free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Colonel Donald Dellinger, Deployment Director of the Continuous Process Improvement Initiative within the National Guard Bureau. Also joining us from IBM is Phil Spencer. Colonel, it's important to note that the term Lean Six Sigma is actually the combination of two management terms, one being lean and the other being Six Sigma. Before we delve into the specifics of the continuous process improvement program that you direct, let's spend some time describing the origins of each of these different approaches. How do these two approaches complement each other, and what drives the culture of continuous improvement?
Well, I think a lot of people don't realize that Lean Six Sigma or continuous process improvement has a lot of origins within the military, especially during World War II. And I think what we mistakenly look at this is a new way of doing business when I think it's been an evolution of best practices throughout time when people were looking at how to solve problems. And with the military, we don't have... the Air Force has gravitated to that quite a bit because it's some simple tools to eliminate waste in a process. And by doing that, you can see a huge improvement very quickly. And some people view it as not as complicated as Six Sigma. But I think with Six Sigma, the power of linking the two is being able to deliver what you're supposed to be delivering all of the time consistently. And for the military, I think that's a very important piece of it. And I think with continuous process improvement, it is a frame of mind or framework. CPI is a way of thinking. It's a way leadership goes about solving problems and looking at problems. And the key thing here is not the tool set and the tools that are used to solve the problems, I think, but the big piece that people miss is the linkage to the strategy of the organization. And that is where the power of change comes from.
So it's critical to tie back whatever toolbox you're using in CPI to strategic intent. I mean, it's very important that the focus of all this effort is to either realize some savings here or reduce some inefficiencies there, because the mission's all consuming. I mean, would you agree?
I would agree, and I think that's the key component. Part of the reason why you do that, too, is that all initiatives, in my mind, fail with leadership sponsorship or leadership commitment to what is going on. And so the way to key into that active sponsorship, I believe, is also through the strategic alignment process, because leaders are going to focus on things that matter to them. So it gives leadership an opportunity to make a decision without investing a lot of time. I think we've all been in situations where we've tried to solve a problem, didn't clearly define the problem, and they maybe either didn't address the problem or hit a symptom, or the results that we thought we were going to get at the beginning and the results that we got at the end did not match at all. And therefore, we said, you know, what did we just waste the last 6 months doing? Because we didn't really improve anything. Although we did a lot of work, we didn't really improve anything within the organization.
Are there any indicators of success that you've seen as an organization or state tries to start implementing? Are there any preconditions that you look for as you get a state involved with the CPI initiative?
We do. We kind of do a leadership analysis, so to speak, when we come in and meet with senior leaders to find out, engage where they're at, and kind of do kind of a profile of the state based off of our first engagement to see, obviously, which leaders are for it, which ones are against it, which ones are not interested. And then from there, we kind of develop a plan of action to address that. And one of the techniques that we use is there's nothing better than proof of principle to what you're trying to establish. And so if there is a leader in the organization that we know clearly supports this, what we try to do is use them as kind of the proof of principle to highlight the success that can be had, as well as demonstrating other success stories throughout the National Guard that we've had. And so we know that you're not going to have a perfect environment with everybody on board because everybody's going to have their viewpoint. And when you're at the senior leadership level, you're pretty much set in your way, so to speak, which is not really a good thing. We try to mitigate that by continuous education and figuring out where the state is and the leadership is, and then tackling it where we see that risk and addressing those items.
So what was the purpose of selecting, or what was the thought process behind the Guard selecting Lean Six Sigma and CPI as their problem-solving toolkit?
When we first started down this road, we had two separate programs. And so the Air Force had the program, which was Air Force Smart Operations 21, or AFSO 21, which is focused on Lean, and the Army was doing Lean Six Sigma. Well, a bunch of the adjutants general got together and said, this does not seem to be an efficient way of developing a continuous process improvement culture within the National Guard across the enterprise. And so they came up to the Chief National Guard Bureau, General McKinley, and requested that we consolidate our efforts and have one joint program so everybody's using the same methodology and so people can be on the same foundational road ahead, so to speak, of moving forward in continuous process improvement. Prior to the new Secretary of Defense with Secretary Gates, all the efficiency initiatives that were going in there, the National Guard is very committed to being good stewards of the taxpayers' dollars and helping out and being the most efficient organization possible.
And what are some of the steps that you're taking to get the states involved in the initiative and to move towards this vision?
Well, one of the things that we knew is that to get everybody involved, we had to have the buy-in at the most senior leadership level. And so we developed a general officer steering committee made up of 10 adjutants generals to be an advisor to General McKinley on the CPI initiative within the Guard. And so that way, General McKinley will be able to see that from the grassroots that is something important for the future of the Guard, and that he has the support of the adjutants generals and moving forward with this methodology to make sure that the Guard's capable and ready. As you know, with declining resources and the budget issues that we're being faced today, it's very important for an organization to be efficient and effective. You can't afford not to be. And especially with the National Guard, we're competing with resources with other DoD components, and it would be naive of us to think that we're not. And so as efficient and effective as we can be on limited resources makes us more valuable, I think, to the country because we can provide a ton of capability at a lower cost compared to other organizations, and I think that's great value that we strive for.
Well, Colonel, all of these initiatives, when they're this significant and requiring this kind of mobilization, must be based on some core values. I'd like you to outline the core values that are the foundation for your efforts within the National Guard Bureau. And how do these values and the work that you're doing kind of tie back to the overall mission of the Guard?
Well, I think one of the values that we have in our program is a commitment to continuous improvement. It's a natural tendency for leaders in the military to want to always improve and always do those types of things to make an organization better and a moving waste. The problem is, I think, is that we're working on short timelines, so to speak, because you're only a job 2 or 3 years and you want to make the most of that time that you're in the job to improve things. And so I think it lends us to make decisions and move forward based off of experience and not necessarily taking the tactical pause, so to speak, to actually get the data and really delve into the problem. And I think the methodology helps out by really getting at the root cause and finding some solutions that you can sustain to keep the problem from reoccurring, and I think that's key. The other piece is, I think CPI and one of the foundations of it is enabling people to participate and problem solve at the lowest level of the organization, that you're getting the input and the buy-in from the people that are actually working the process. And I think that is very powerful. A prime example of that is we have a wing out in West Virginia that does the maintenance on C-5 aircraft. And it took them approximately 137 days to turn one aircraft around. And after doing an RIE, they got that time down from 137 days to approximately 30 days. I think the other piece is always keeping, quote, the customer in mind. You know, who are you servicing and what are you trying to accomplish and for who and to what end? Keeping that focus keeps you on track and keeps you from unnecessarily doing things that you might not otherwise do and waste resources and time, which is very precious, especially in the National Guard. You know, our biggest resource is time because we don't have the same time as the active duty. We're not on duty 365, but we still have to say have the same mission capability and do the same types of missions as them. So time is a huge resource, and we can't afford to waste that resource. I think the other thing is being receptive to new ideas. I know a lot of people look at Lean Six Sigma and think that the methodology is very rigid and it kind of hinders creativity, but I would argue that it's just the opposite. And the reason why I say that is that I think it's good to have a very rigid methodology, but within the execution of that methodology, when you get the teams and you actually get the people that are actually working the process, the solutions that come out are what is the creative aspect of it. But the methodology keeps you on track and making sure that you're solving the problem that you intended to solve and that you get the results that you intended to get. But it doesn't hinder the creativity, I think, in the solutions. And I think the last piece of that, going back to what I said there, was, you know, decisions based off of data and facts, not just a gut feel or experience in the past, because a process that you might have worked 10 years ago isn't necessarily the same process as it is today.
Well, as I understand it, the National Guard deployment of CPI is organized around four focus areas or lines of operations. Would you tell us about each of these lines of operations, and to what extent are they the pillars on which your strategy is based?
Well, we looked at the four lines of operation because we looked at how would you deploy continuous process improvement within the organization, and that's how we developed the four pillars. So the first one, the first pillar of the line of operation is our strategy line of operation, and to me that's one of the real critical lines that we have. And the reason being is that's where we conduct our executive training. We now have a champions course and a project sponsor course to address that gap in the knowledge and the support at the executive level. And we do the strategic alignment during this time in this phase. And I think that's really the key component because that's where you're going to get the leadership buy-in. And hopefully that's where you get the project selection that people are behind and see the value added and what's going to be happening as you move through the training cycle and get people trained and get people executed. So the next piece of that in our process map, our high-level process map, is after we do the initial training, get the executive leaders on board and get them educated. We have the project selected and the project sponsor selected and trained. Then what we do is we go through the training line of operation, which is the actual training of the belt candidates. And we've gone from having a direct green belt program and black belt program to a farm system. And what we have now is we have a 2-week green belt program and a 2-week black belt program that nests on top of that. And in order to get accepted into the black belt program, you have to score 85% or higher on the final exam in the green belt curriculum and also be green belt certified prior to be led into the black belt program. One, I think that shows a dedication of the candidate, but it also shows that they have a propensity and a will to want to learn more versus bringing somebody in at a high level and investing 4 weeks of time in a very in-depth and rigorous methodology, and one, they may not be the right candidate, they may not have the aptitude. If you go through, they may not have the attitude. So by having a farm system, so to speak, you kind of weed those people out, but you're still getting people exposed to CPI and the methodology, what I think is very key. The more people you can get exposed, the more ingrained and quickly you can get it into the culture. So not everybody has the aptitude or the attitude to want to be a black belt, but being exposed as a green belt will help you in no matter what position you're at or what other leadership position that you go to. So after you come out of the training program, it goes into our execution line of strategy, which is actually taking the candidates from a trained perspective in the methodology to be a practitioner and mentoring and coaching them to be a practitioner. And what we do there is provide mentoring, master black belts currently through IBM, to help mentor and coach the candidates through their entire process in completing their project, either through a rapid improvement event or using the Lean Six Sigma methodology to get certified. And I think that's very key because not only are we teaching, we're mentoring and coaching so that they're not stumbling on their own, having to work through a new methodology that they may not be familiar with. Because it's one thing to take it from the schoolhouse. It's another thing to take it and actually apply it and use it in practice. And what we want to do is our goal is after the execution phase is to have individuals that are comfortable enough in using the tools that they can go out on their own and leverage what they've learned, not only to do projects, which I think a lot of people look at Lean Six Sigma and the focus is, oh, I got to get a project and I have to get certified. To me, that's really not the end. You know, one of the big keys here is teaching people how to facilitate and work with groups and individuals to come up with a solution that is across the enterprise and not just in their area of concern. So after the execution phase, we have one line of operation that crosses all of them, actually, and that's the change management one. And I think that's one of the most challenging lines of operation that we have. And we weren't sure how to put that in because change management, cultural change is really kind of touchy-feely stuff, right? So how do you measure it and how do you know if you're achieving it? So it's kind of embedding an organization on a new way of doing business, a new way of approaching problem solving. So the change management aspect is very key and very important because what you want to do is you want to build an organization at all levels so that you have sustainability. And that's the biggest challenge that we have in this environment.
How is the National Guard improving its operations, becoming more efficient and controlling cost? We will ask Colonel Donald Dellinger, Deployment Director of the Continuous Process Improvement Initiative within the National Guard Bureau, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. What is FAA's Next Generation Air Transportation System, or NextGen? How is the U.S. Department of Homeland Security turning its one DHS vision into a reality? What is New York City doing to shape a government that is customer-focused, innovative, and more efficient? And how is the DoD improving its business operations? Pick up the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine and find out. We bring you insights and interviews from government executives who are changing the way government does business. Hear from FAA Administrator Randy Babbitt, DHS Undersecretary for Management Raphael Boris, New York City Deputy Mayor for Operations Stephen Goldsmith, and Dave Winogrand, Assistant Deputy Chief Management Officer at DoD. Professor Joseph Nye and General Anthony Zinni on power, security, and leadership in the 21st century, and seven management imperatives that government leaders should pursue to be successful in an era of fiscal constraint. All of this and so much more in the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine. Download or order a free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Colonel Donald Dellinger, Deployment Director of the Continuous Process Improvement Initiative within the National Guard Bureau. Also joining us from IBM is Phil Spencer. Colonel, it strikes me that the successful deployment of CPI Lean Six Sigma programs is really not an end in itself. I think you alluded to that in the last segment. Rather, it's an opportunity to start something new or begin, meaning that its success is about driving it into the culture of an organization. And you did a wonderful job in the last segment of articulating that. I'd like to go back to this whole issue of change management and get a sense, even a more in-depth sense, of your strategy and how you're changing or working the change management aspect to make your CPI initiative in the Guard successful?
Well, I think change management is the real key to what we're talking about here. The methodology is sound. The real question is, how do you get leaders to buy into the methodology to be able to execute it the way it needs to be executed to receive those benefits? I think it's a continuous dialogue, continuous education, having a really robust strategic communication plans to be able to highlight your success stories and proof of principle. I think once you have that proof of principle, it's hard to deny the results or the potential of what can be achieved. The change management aspect is so important that I think we lose sight of that. We focus on the training pipeline. We focus on the number of projects. But in order to have a sustainable program and one that's really going to improve the organization, you have to have that sponsorship and buy-in, because that sponsorship and buy-in is also what's going to give you the sustainability. Because if you don't have that, then you're not going to get the right candidates going through the program. But I think that continuous communication, the continuous beating of the drum of how important it is and how it's going to help the organization, then communicating those successes, picking the right people, picking the right projects so people see value is very important and are very critical, not only to the sustainment at the location that you're trying to implement, but also for us, those success stories is the best advertisement that we can have for the program. And so I think adding value is the most important thing and how quickly you do that. And so without that change management aspect, you're looking at a problem-solving methodology that may benefit a little bit of the organization, but it's not going to have the power or really improve the organization to the extent in which it can.
And some of those success stories that you alluded to, which are some of the most powerful ways to change other folks and get buy-in, they've achieved breakthrough change to some extent. And what I want to talk about is, though, elaborate on current barriers to real change. Would you tell us about some of the current barriers you're facing in your department? And what are you doing to break through some of these barriers, or break down some of these barriers?
Well, I think one of the biggest barriers that we have is one of the greatness of the National Guard is how we're organized and structured. The Adjutant General working for the governor, working with the state, with the National Guard Bureau helping provide oversight with no direct command and control. But the problem is that when you want to get things done in a large organization like that, it takes a lot of relationship building, because not everybody is necessarily going to be on board with what you're trying to do, because initiatives that you do aren't necessarily going to benefit everyone in the organization. Some states may have different priorities than what NGB has for the National Guard as a whole. And so trying to get people on board there makes it very complicated. It just means you just have to work a lot and build those relationships and trust. I think the other piece is getting buy-in, true buy-in. And I think when you see that happen, it's amazing to see how much you can get done and how quickly you can get it done. And a lot of the obstacles and roadblocks that you normally see in a continuous process employment are kind of gone. So I think those two are really the key things that we have to work on within the National Guard. But I'm happy to say that in the second year, we've trained over about 384 practitioners, both Green Belt and Black Belt. And we have completed 68 projects as of this time with about a $32 million worth of benefit to the National Guard. And we have another 236 active projects that are being worked on now. Now, I know some people may say, well, $31 million in a budget of billions isn't great, but I think a program starting from nothing and realizing $31 million is a huge achievement. And then if you look at the ones that we have in the pipeline, the program's only going to grow. And I think when you look at our projects, you know, we have some outstanding projects that show great return. We have other projects that don't necessarily show a huge dollar savings, but I think we have to look past the dollar savings and look at the improvement in the organization and also look at the growth and the maturity of the program. I think as the program matures, you'll start to see opportunities for replication of problems across the enterprise. I think you'll also see opportunities to really be able to have the expertise to tackle some of these huge issues that are facing the National Guard as we grow our practitioners and as they gain experience in solving these problems.
And what I wanted to just say, with that $32 million in benefit that you've valued, it's interesting to me because it's very important when you think of the amount of time you save from realizing this. I mean, this $32 million could mean a lot more time to go to mission. It's more than a dollar amount, I would say. It gets you focused on your core mission.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people lose sight of that. When we go and talk, a lot of leaders say, well, what if we save time? You know, we also forget that in the National Guard, like I said, time and manning and personnel are our two greatest challenges. And any time that you're able to also give back time to the soldier to maybe go home an hour early and have dinner on time with the kids, to me is a big win. Now, I don't know how you measure that, but to me that's health of the force. And sometimes we overlook at it because all we want to see is tangible numbers and those types of results. But I don't think you can take a price tag on that when you talk about the health of the force, because our greatest resource, I think, in any organization are its people. And by being able to give back something, whether it be time or even looking at what people are doing and reallocate those resources to a higher priority that might have been shortened, but now that you improve a process, now you have more resources to allocate to that priority, I think is very beneficial to any leader.
The Guard's comprised of 54 states and territories, and those projects and all those trained resources you just mentioned are spread across, at the current time, about just over half of those states and territories. Is that correct?
Yes. Right now we have 35 states that are currently implementing continuous process improvement. And I think with the energy that we're generating on the projects now being completed and the types of projects being completed, because now leaders are seeing, hey, if people are getting these types of results and these issues, we have similar issues. And if they're having these kind of results, we should be able to have the same type of results if we kind of gravitate to that. And I think that's where we're going to start really seeing some energy here in the next quarter, is being able to, again, through strategic communications, highlighting our victory, so to speak, proof of principle, and then getting other people energized and on board.
That's great. And it seems like it presents you with a couple of different opportunities. And one would be to sustain the gains and sustain the interest in the initiative that has already been generated. But in addition, then, to perhaps attract some of the states and territories that aren't participating right now. Could you talk about those two opportunities and how you're addressing them?
Sure. With those opportunities also come some issues. And what I mean by that is that, as in any organization, especially in the military, sometimes we have turnover. As always, the states that are participating that are doing well, you know who your players are, and you don't really have to focus a lot of effort on them because they're going to go ahead and do business as you expect because they've bought in. The states that have started down the path and has had leadership turnover, we have an engagement strategy to go back and reengage those new leaders in that organization to kind of revisit, hey, this is where your state was. This is how your state's doing. We would like you to continue down this path, but give them a better understanding of what's involved in continuous process improvement. And also next then is targeting those states that have yet to participate or show an interest. But I'm a firm believer that the proof's in the pudding. So on engagements with states that aren't doing it, we offer to come out. If we don't get invited, I'm okay with that. But I also don't go beating down the door to try to bring people in the fold, so to speak, that aren't interested. One, again, time is a precious resource for me, and to me that's a waste of a resource. I think the focusing on making those states that are involved successful, again, using them as a model, will bring everybody else in. Because when states that are employing CPI become the best states or the model states and doing well in all the metrics that they're graded on, the states that maybe aren't doing so well are going to be going, what is the best practices? What are they using that we're not using that's getting them to rise to the top? And I think you'll see that all high-performing organizations, whether they use Lean Six Sigma or whatever methodology they use, they have a solid strategy. They're able to communicate that strategy and execute that strategy very efficiently and effectively. And I think Lean Six Sigma is a natural thing to gravitate to be able to do that.
Those are some great lessons learned. And, with so many projects going on in 35 different states across the country, there must be a lot of moving parts and a lot of governance challenges in terms of bringing the projects in, ensuring that there are quality projects, for instance, they're sponsored and so forth. Could you talk a little bit about some of the lessons learned or some of the best practices around that you've put in place?
Sure. I think one of the biggest challenges that we had at the beginning was that, again, it goes back to what I said the focus was. When you take an initiative like this, it's easy to focus on How many people do I get through training? How many projects do I got in the hopper? And so that was the initial push, and that's what you would expect. But as we matured and looking back at it, we realized there was a huge gap in the project sponsor aspect. Because the project sponsor is going to be the individual that's really going to make the project go or not go, so to speak. The candidate's just the guy that's doing the staff work. And so we developed a two-day project sponsor course, which teaches a project sponsor what he needs to know, discusses DMAIC so he understands what the candidate is going through, goes through all the toll gate reviews, what's required, what questions should he be asking. And so to us, that helps facilitate project completion because now you have an active champion that sees, hey, this project's important to me, I need to get it done, and I understand what my role is as a project sponsor, and in order to help the candidate out, I need to be very active in removing those obstacles so he can get the work done. I think the other thing for us is leveraging power steering. Having that database and using that to manage, it allows us to go through and identify those projects that are taking longer than they need to so we can focus effort on getting those completed. And we actually use that strategy, focus strategy, this last quarter to get a lot of projects done. And what we did was, in conjunction with the Master Black Belt, identify those projects which were close to being completed and with some extra effort could be completed. And we had them focus their efforts on targeting those projects to get done as they're working and mentoring and coaching the other ones so that we can start having a continuous pipeline of success stories versus having a long strung out population of projects, but not really a huge turn of them getting completed. So we assumed some risk, but I think it was well worth it because we had the biggest number of projects completed in one quarter for third quarter. And we're looking at doubling or tripling the number of projects completed in this quarter of the FY because of that focused effort. And I think what it also helps is now candidates are getting projects done and there's a sense of accomplishment. And then with that, working with the states for them to communicate those wins and those success stories generates energy within that organization. And again, going back to proof of principle, shows what can be accomplished using the methodology and if it's supported, and I think that's really key.
Actually, I'd like to touch on that a little bit more in respect from a project portfolio perspective. Some things work, some things don't work, best practices, right? Lessons learned. What are some of the key best practices and some of the lessons learned you want to highlight? And how do you, more importantly, get this information out to the states that are actually engaging?
Well, that's very challenging for us because as we said earlier, our footprint is the entire continental United States, the territories as far away as Guam. So it makes it very difficult. So what we try to do is have a very robust communication strategy through the General Officer Steering Committee. We highlight those victories through that avenue. We provide a quarterly update to the Chief of the National Guard Bureau on the status of the program so he has talking points to be able to discuss the program. Every quarter, we use Defense Connect Online to meet with each state has a CPI director who runs a CPI program for the Adjutant General. So every quarter we have a Defense Connect Online virtual meeting to be able to talk about practices, letting the field, hearing from the customer on what the issues are and what their concerns are and how we as a entity at NGB can assist them in overcoming those obstacles or support them better. We're also having our first director's workshop. Actually, it'll be the second, but one of the new things that we're doing in this director's workshop is we're actually having a training program for the CPI directors on, what do you need to be as a change agent.
What does the future hold for the National Guard's Continuous Process Improvement Initiative? We will ask Colonel Donald Dellinger, Deployment Director of the Continuous Process Improvement Initiative within the National Guard Bureau, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. Each edition of the Business of Government magazine has as its focus the core mission of the IBM Center, connecting research to practice as a means to improve public management. We do this by bringing together insights and perspectives blended with an equal measure of practicality and reflection from an array of government leaders, public managers, thinkers, and practitioners. Hi, I'm Michael Keegan, managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. In an era of fiscal contraction, today's leaders face unique challenges that present many difficult choices. It is a period that, while imposing many constraints, simultaneously confers as many opportunities to make a difference, introduce new ways of managing, explore pragmatic approaches, and pursue management imperatives that help government leaders perform in an ever-challenging, complex environment. In our latest edition, we bring you conversations with FAA Administrator Randy Babbitt, outlining the Next Generation Air Transportation System, or NextGen. Raphael Boris, DHS Undersecretary for Management, discusses how the department is turning its one DHS vision into a reality. Stephen Goldsmith, Deputy Mayor for Operations for the City of New York, discusses how the city is shaping a government that is customer-focused, innovative, and efficient. We offer perspectives on power, security, and leadership in the 21st century from Professor Joseph S. Nye, Jr. and General Anthony Zinni, former commander of the U.S. Central Command. Our forum presents seven management imperatives that government leaders must pursue to be successful in this new environment. All of this and so much more in the Spring-Summer 2011 edition of the Business of Government magazine. Download or order a free copy at businessofgovernment.org and find out how the business of government is not business as usual. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Colonel Donald Ellinger, Deployment Director of the Continuous Process Improvement Initiative within the National Guard Bureau. Also joining us from IBM is Phil Spencer. So, Colonel, I talked to many of my guests about the use of collaboration and partnership among agencies and private sector to achieve mission results. For the CPI initiative within the National Guard Bureau, how are you folks leveraging partnerships to improve management operation and program outcomes?
Well, I'll be quite honest with you, Mike. Right now, we're not leveraging a lot because we're in the infancy. We're just trying to get energy going behind our program and getting projects completed. But we have thought about this a lot. I think making those partnerships, we have a unique, I think, opportunity here in the National Guard, which I'll be pursuing here in the next year. It's one of my future goals, not in the current goal for this year because of what we have on the plate. But within the National Guard and the partnership within the state, we think there's a great opportunity for the states to partner with quality type organizations within that state and businesses to share best practices, to be able to go and do site visits and to see what's going on in industry. And I think the Air Force does a really good job of leveraging the corporate relationship. And I think we have a unique opportunity as the National Guard because of our natural relationships that we have within the state already. And so that's kind of the next progression that we see is developing those types of relationships. And so that building a partnership with an organization within the state near units where they can actually have kind of a resource to go back and share information and get assistance and help that it doesn't necessarily have to be a tail back to us. I think leveraging what the other services are doing is very important, especially within DOD and with the financial future that we face as an enterprise, and not just looking at it from a single organizational lens, but looking at a DOD-wide lens. Because really, at the end of the day, the resources that we get are not our resources. They're the taxpayers' resources. And with everything that's been going on and what's been in the news lately, I think we as leaders owe it to the nation to be as efficient as possible with the resources that we're given. And I think in order to do that, looking at things within DOD, prime example would be, you know, aircraft is aircraft. So if you have within, I think the Navy had a great program on air fuel. So why would that not be able to go across the whole enterprise? So I think leveraging what all the other services are doing and building those relationships. And, you know, I'll be happy to say that I think the reason why we're so far along, too, in the short period of time that we've come is because we've taken the best practices and we've seen the obstacles that other services have had when they've implemented. And so we've bypassed some of those issues. Prime example is a strategic alignment for us. Right away, right off the bat, if a state doesn't do a strategic alignment, we don't send anybody to training. So it's not just, hey, let's just go do projects. You know, and we took that from the lessons learned from the other organizations that have been doing this. And so right off the bat, one of the criteria is to do a strategic alignment, so ensuring that from the get-go, we have some type of alignment, project alignment to strategy to help add value to the organization. So I think collaboration is key, and I think those relationships are very important. We're at the infancy of that, but we do have a plan to kind of to fan out and grow that as we grow as a program.
Don, you're obviously very passionate about providing value to the Guard and using CPI to provide the operational excellence that the Guard is going to be needs now and will be looking for in the future. Could you talk a little bit, though, about an important element of that value, which is to innovate processes in addition to improving them, and the interplay between innovation and CPI? Does it tend to encourage innovation? Does it tend to stifle it? What's your perspective on that?
I think that's an interesting question because I think a lot of people look at the rigidity of how rigid the methodology is. I mean, it's a very rigid methodology if you look at it, right, based off of the scientific method. So a lot of people will look at that right away and say, well, using that type of methodology, being so rigid and following steps, will hinder innovation. But I think it's just the opposite. I think it encourages innovation, because if you look at the heart of Lean Six Sigma, it's not about some individual sitting in his office figuring out what the solution is. It's about collaborating. It's about team building. It's about finding solutions across the enterprise for everybody that adds value to that process, not just one person that touches that process. And when you bring those people together and the teams together, and you're getting input from the people that are actually working the process, I think that's where you get the innovation and the creativity. I think the power of Lean Six Sigma, too, is that, you know, you do risk mitigation, so you know what the risks are. So I think you can take a chance and be creative on a solution that you select if you've identified the risks and have a risk mitigation strategy. And the other power, I think, is once you develop your metrics and your measurement systems, you'll know whether or not it's okay for you to take risk on something if you think that the outcome is going to be great. And I think the measurement system allows you to make those adjustments and those tweaks as you go through implementing your solution. So if you start to see problems creeping up based off of you taking a chance on doing something creative and innovative, you're able to make those adjustments because you're able to track how well it's working or not working and go back and look at the process itself and make those adjustments. I think the real challenge, just like anything, is the leadership. Are leaders creating a culture of innovation? Are they allowing people to take chances, or are you in a defect, zero defect culture where people take chances, and if they don't work, they're put off to the side, or are leaders willing to accept risk? But with accepting risk and innovation, I think you have to be, one, patient, and two, accept failure. You have to be able to accept failure, because not everything is going to work. Not everything is going to be 100% solution. I know sometimes as fast-paced as everything is, we fail to accept that type of risk because we're so results-oriented. And so we look at it as if that we have a failure, it's a reflection on us, or we have to have results now and we can't afford to have something that's not going to work. But I would argue that sometimes, depending on the problem and the situation, you need to take that time and you need to instill that type of culture where people aren't afraid to be innovative and go out there and take some risks, because that's the only way the organization is really going to grow. And that's the only way that you're really going to capitalize on your intellectual capital. I think you'll see now that organizations that maximize their intellectual capital, grow it, let people think and make decisions, are the organizations that are flourishing. And those that don't end up losing their intellectual capital because they go somewhere else where they feel wanted and that their voice is heard. And I think that's just a natural tendency for us. I think everybody wants to do the right thing. The question is, how well as leaders do we cultivate that and draw that out of people to make the organization better?
Don, I'd like to focus on the future. What are some of the major opportunities and challenges you'll encounter in the future? And how do you envision your organization evolving to meet those challenges and seize those opportunities?
Well, I think one of the biggest challenges that we're going to have, Mike, is going to be on sustainment. Most of our, like for me, I'll only be in this job for probably 2 more years. So a lot of what we're doing on change management, I hate to say this, a lot of it is based off of personalities. Mm-hmm. And so the challenge is, for me, is then how do I bring up my staff, which is very limited, to continue down the same road that I'm going, at least in principle. So I don't know how many times you've seen when a new leader comes that the whole organization takes a huge shift in a different direction. How do you maintain the momentum? And I think that's part of the sustainment piece that when we go talk to senior leaders about is how do they get it instilled in their leaders so when they leave, it's just the way that they do business. And I think that's a huge challenge. Part of the good thing in the Guard is that a lot of us stay in the same location, so to speak. So if you're an Oregon Guardsman or a Texas Guardsman, you're usually staying within that state National Guard organization. You may move around different units within that organization, but you stay within that organization. So I think the selection of the correct people to training, to be exposed to this, and the leadership focusing on this and seeing value, because we put things in our toolkit that we know work, right? So as we go through and we learn and we experience and